Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For political junkies, it was almost too delicious. Conservative Rush Limbaugh and liberal scion Patrick Kennedy, both in the headlines in a single week for drug abuse. Confessed abuser Limbaugh fingerprinted and mugshot in the Palm Beach County Jail. Drug-troubled Kennedy careening through Washington on a wild midnight tear and checking into rehab. But for the millions of Americans addicted to or abusing prescription drugs and their families, there is nothing delicious about the consequences. The country's flood of off-prescription Vicodin, OxyContin, Xanax, Ritalin, and much more is taking a toll. Up next on Point, Rush Limbaugh, Patrick Kennedy, and the national tide of prescription drug abuse. Joining me now from Providence, Rhode Island, is Scott McKay, political reporter for the Providence Journal. Scott, thanks very much for being with us.
Nice to be on the show, Tom.
Remind us of the basics of this Patrick Kennedy story. It exploded over the weekend. What happened?
Well, basically, Mr. Kennedy got himself into a jam where I think everybody in the country knows about it now. It was the first eight jokes on the Leno show Monday night were about Patrick Kennedy. And when something happens to a Kennedy, obviously, it's not like it happens to you and me. It becomes big news, particularly for the tabloids. He crashed his car at 2:45 a.m. in Washington near the Capitol, said he was going to vote, later said that he had a problem with Ambien and had taken another drug, Phenergan, for a gastric problem. But
of course, there was no vote going on at that hour.
No, there was not. The last vote was 3 hours previous. And so he obviously perhaps had a blackout. Who really knows? He hasn't spoken at length about it. Although in an interview with the Journal, he did say that all of the problems that he's had over the years, the airport security thing from years ago.
A few years ago in L.A. when he got upset with a security agent
in
L.A.
In, yes, mm-hmm. and he had a problem on a boat several years ago.
Mm-hmm. His girlfriend called for help.
The Coast Guard, that's correct. Mm-hmm. And he said all of this was related to substance abuse. And I think that we all know the battles that his mother has fought. We know that
those were mainly alcohol. What about the there's this allegation? You heard Rush Limbaugh refer to a cover up here. There's some continuing interest in whether or not he was actually drunk that night instead of on painkillers.
Yes, the police report did refer to watery eyes and red eyes and this kind of thing. And he admits that he's had a problem with that in the past. And he, in fact, told John Mulligan from our Washington bureau that he is a binge, a person who binges on alcohol, unlike his mother, who he said was a maintenance alcoholic.
What does that mean?
Someone who needs alcohol every day, who drinks every day. Patrick's not that kind of person. He's the kind of person who would go out on, say, a weekend and drink a whole lot.
Now, we're really looking at prescription drug abuse in this hour. Kennedy said it wasn't alcohol. He said it wasn't even prescription painkillers on this particular night. But he's been very open saying those have been a big problem for him in the past. What's his story there?
Well, you know, he had back surgery. Actually, it sounds a little bit like Limbaugh in this respect. Mm-hmm. He had back surgery many, many years ago. And it had attendant back pain. And, of course, a lot of doctors prescribe those kind of opiates to kill pain, because anybody who's had back pain knows that it's severe and that these things work. The problem is there's a downside of it where you become dependent on them. And I think when you mix them with other substances, obviously you create yourself a big, big, big problem.
So who knows what exactly was going on there, but he's now in the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota in another round of rehab. He just had a round of rehab in December, I think
he said. Yes, over Christmas. And he, as a young man, when he was at prep school at Phillips Andover, he had a cocaine problem, which he acknowledged years later, and he went to Spofford Hall, I believe it was, which is a rehabilitation center in New Hampshire, to deal with cocaine abuse. Since then, back in 2000, I believe, when Tipper Gore whose battle with depression made an appearance in Rhode Island. Patrick made a very public sort of confession, whatever you want to call it, saying that he had battled depression. And since then, he's pretty much acknowledged that he's bipolar, as it's since come out that his mother also is.
A lot of Americans wrestling with a lot of different kinds of drug problems. Two big ones in the news here with Kennedy and Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
How about his political prospects off this? Is it going to hurt him in Rhode Island, or is his seat assured?
Well, it's interesting. So far, the state party and the people in Rhode Island, the Democrats, it's a very Democratic district that he represents. And so far, he's had support from people. People have urged compassion. People from Jack Reed, who's our senator and the leader of the party, on down to the rank and file, have pretty much circled the wagons and said, Patrick, you know, he's been endorsed by the party for another run for reelection. And I think that the Republicans don't really have a serious candidate. The last serious candidate they ran against, Kennedy, was in 1994, where they had a fairly attractive young doctor.
But that's getting pretty far back at this point.
It sure is. And, you know, like most districts, 96-98% of incumbents get reelected.
Yep. Scott, if you would, if you stand by for a minute here, mm-hmm. I want to swing over to the other end of the political spectrum and the Rush Limbaugh story. Susan Spencer Wendell joins us from Palm Beach, Florida. She's a reporter for the Palm Beach Post and has been following the ins and outs of this story for a long time now. Susan, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So Rush was back in the headlines in the last week or so. Remind us of where his whole case stands.
At the moment, earlier this month, he entered a deferred prosecution agreement with prosecutors in Palm Beach County. At the moment, he is charged with a crime, a third-degree felony, withholding information from a practitioner. But that charge will eventually be dropped upon successful completion of a 18-month period where he continues to seek treatment, etc. He pled not guilty. He did not have to make any admission of guilt in doing this. And that is, so the case essentially is in limbo.
So it's a kind of standard treatment in many cases for first-time abuser, the mugshot, the fingerprints. But if he straightens up and flies right and keeps straight for over 18 months here, what, the charges will go away?
Yes, the charge will be dropped and the record eventually could be expunged.
Remind us, take us back to 2003 when this just roared into the headlines. It was his former housekeeper, I guess, who first went to the National Enquirer and said there's something up with Rush. What did she say?
She told a story of exchanging acquiring tens of thousands of painkillers for him. The story broke in the National Enquirer in October of 2003. She also was in discussion with the local prosecutor's office telling a similar story at the time. And that is in earnest the next month when local prosecutors undertook an investigation of him using search warrants to seize his medical records.
Now, Rush Limbaugh's downplaying all this now, but then he was very upfront about it. I mean, he said on the air, I am addicted to prescription pain medication. What did he say the origin of that addiction was?
He did announce on air in October 2003 that he was addicted to prescription painkillers and attributed it to a unsuccessful back surgery and acquiring the addiction after that. He did become public only after the Klein's story broke in the National Enquirer and discussions were underway with the local prosecutor.
So the prosecution of this got tangled up on an issue of his medical records. What happened there? What did the charge or allegation, I don't know if it was formal or not, please tell us, was doctor shopping, where you go around to a number of different doctors and between them you manage to get a lot of prescription pills. I don't know if Rush did that, but that's the way many Americans who are addicted apparently do it. They went for his records and that became a problem.
Exactly. The local prosecutor's office, the Palm Beach County State Attorney, authorized the use of search warrants to seize his medical records in late 2003. This alighted a long battle all the way to the highest court, the Florida Supreme Court, where Mr. Limbaugh fought the seizure of his medical records, claiming his right to privacy, was ultimately unsuccessful in that the high court refusing to hear his case.
It kind of snagged it up.
Well, it did. It certainly did, and it certainly delayed the investigation for at least a year and a half. and muck things up for the prosecutors, because as anyone who works in criminal justice knows, the longer an investigation drags out, the people's memories do not get better over time, obviously.
What was the drug that Rush Limbaugh was using?
We see in the search warrants used to seize his medical records, not a lot of OxyContin, hydrocodone, various others. It's not predominantly OxyContin, though, mm-hmm. in the search warrants, where that's really the only place that we can actually see the drugs that he was using are in those search warrants.
And Scott McKay, what about Patrick Kennedy? Is it on the record, the painkillers that he's wrestled with?
No, it isn't.
We're joined right now from Ann Arbor, Michigan, by Dr. Howard Markell. He's a practicing physician, professor of pediatrics and communicable diseases, professor of history of medicine at the University of Michigan. He's author of An Anatomy of Addiction, published coming out next year. Dr. Markell, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So we've got two big names connected with prescription drug abuse here, but it's a much bigger problem than these two men. How would you describe the state of prescription drug abuse in the country today?
Well, it's an enormous problem, and the umbrella problem on top of it of addiction in general and substance abuse, I think, is one of the gravest public health problems facing Americans today. In terms of prescription drug abuse, we know that at least 2-4% of all Americans today have abused these substances in the last month alone. Those statistics are difficult to come by, of course,
right,
because as we just heard about Mr. Limbaugh and Mr. Kennedy, this is not exactly a problem people are forthcoming about.
What are the drugs that hook people, and how does it tend to happen?
Well, there are so many drugs that could hook people. I always used to say, given an absolute disregard for medical ethics, I could probably make an addict out of anyone. Mm. The most popular ones are opiate or opioid painkillers, as you mentioned, oxycodone, Vicodin, OxyContin, codeine, and so on. They're all rather similar drugs, by the way, these opiate painkillers. Some are more powerful than others, some pack a bigger wallet, but they're all basically opiates, and they're extremely addictive. But other drugs called CNS depressants, central nervous system depressants, things like Valium, Xanax, and so on, are very heavily abused. And more recently, stimulants, things like amphetamines and Ritalin and other drugs like that, are being abused by teenagers as well.
How does the abuse tend to unfold, Dr. Markell? Are these drugs prescribed by doctors, and then people somehow just go on a tear with them? How do they get that many? Or people pawing around in somebody else's medicine chest? How does it tend to begin?
Well, all of the above. It depends on, there are no two stories of addicts that are exactly alike. And some people, Mr. Limbaugh, for example, may have had back surgery and were prescribed these very heavy-duty opiate painkillers. And after a while, the pain may subside, but the need for these drugs, because they are so addictive, remains and, in fact, grows. But, a lot of people are prescribed these drugs probably needlessly. I mean, we have a huge armamentarium of painkillers. Some are opiates, some are drugs like Advil or ibuprofen, some are Tylenol or aspirin. And how we prescribe those drugs as doctors is something we need to look at. And of course, there are people who actively seek these out from doctors. Some people seek them out on the internet. It's not terribly difficult to get these drugs from offshore pharmacies. There's the black market that you can purchase them. And of course, as a pediatrician, I'm seeing teenagers who are helping themselves to their parents' medicine chests.
Help us learn from these two stories that are so much in the public limelight. I'm sure there are many intimate stories that people have, and we'll hear them in a minute. But from these two very, very public figures and the behavior that we've seen, the consequences we've seen, do these look familiar to you as a practicing physician?
Oh, absolutely. And it runs the full gamut of how we look at drug abuse and alcoholism in American society today, from calling it a moral failing or weakness all the way to a true public health problem and an individual's disease.
Rush Limbaugh, who for years railed against this as a moral failing and weakness, even while apparently he was on the drugs.
Interesting, isn't it? And one of the major symptoms of all substance abuse is denial. It is interesting that he's making it out to be a moral failing in others, but a medical problem in himself. I take the medical point of view. No one elects to become an addict. Now, you do have to reach for the first few pills or lines of cocaine mm-hmm. or whatever to become an addict, but it truly is a disease. We have excellent evidence as we learn more and more about the brain and how the brain changes after the long-term use of these drugs. It truly does change. And there's a great saying among addicts, you know, you can make a pickle out of a cucumber, but you can't turn that pickle you can make a cucumber into a pickle, right. But you can't make the pickle back into a cucumber. And that's what we're finding about the addicted brain. And, of course, it's a long-term chronic relapsing disease.
Susan Spencer Wendell, what about with Mr. Limbaugh in his private life there in Palm Beach, as far as it's known or on the radio? Has his painkiller addiction, you know, was it evidence in his on-air performance earlier? Is there a change now that he's apparently cleaned up?
I have no personal knowledge of that, nor have heard any references to how the use of the drugs affected his performance on the air, so I can't really speak to that at the moment. And as to his local social life, he himself, you know, prides himself in being very hermit-like and protecting his privacy. So,
in his $30 million mansion near the sea there?
Yes.
Not a bad place to hang. Scott McKay, what about with Patrick Kennedy? He tied his own behavior directly to prescription drug abuse?
Patrick obviously can't protect his privacy. He's a very public personage, not only with his surname, but the fact is his job requires him to be in Rhode Island attending a multitude of events every weekend, as you know most people in Congress do, and this is the way he's been. I do think... And the doctor might have an opinion on this. I do think Patrick faces a special challenge. Now, he's got to decide, because he's been through these events of erratic behavior before. I think he's got to decide in the long term, can he keep his job with the various stresses? And you're going to be around fundraisers where there's alcohol and bars. And can he keep his job and keep this lifestyle? Or is the job part of the support system that he needs? In other words, if he loses the job, does he then spiral downward? And I think it's an open question. A lot of people who are close to Patrick, who want him to succeed, the Democrats, obviously, in the district and friends, are wondering just what does the future hold for this kid?
Your newspaper, the Providence Journal, was with him as he made his way to the airport to head out to Mayo Clinic, stopped off at his father's, Ted Kennedy's house for some words of support. I mean, here's a family that's been through... the ringer on this front. This is familiar terrain to them.
Yes, and Patrick, you know, you have to look at his mother, and he was the main sibling.
This is Joan, of course.
Joan Kennedy. He was the main sibling who was getting those 2 a.m. phone calls from the emergency rooms in Boston, and he's dealt with this for a long, long time. It's been very painful for him. His brother Teddy acknowledged that he had an alcohol problem many years ago, and he went to... rehab, and he's done fine ever since. And you see him, I saw him election night last year, and he was drinking club soda. I mean,
Dr. Markell, let me ask you, from what you've seen of Patrick Kennedy's incident on Capitol Hill, does this look to you like Ambien, sleeping pills, and Phenergan, or whatever it is, for nausea?
Well, I always make it a point not to diagnose a patient I've never seen.
Fair.
But it certainly is consistent. The point is, I think...
It is? It doesn't look like alcohol to you? I mean, there's still some suspicion about that.
It could or it could not. I really don't know. The point is that we don't need to separate, is Ambien a better drug to abuse, or Phenergan, or alcohol, or OxyContin. Mm-hmm. They're all drugs that alter the mind and have potential risks and problems associated with them. So... it certainly could be a mixture of one, two, or all of the above. The point is, it doesn't really matter. He has admitted he does have a problem. Mm-hmm. The good news is, and this is speaking to what was just said, can he continue in his job? The good news is that there are millions of Americans who are in recovery for one substance abuse or another, who are doing a wonderful job. Sometimes they relapse. Of course, we have people with hypertension or diabetes or someone that need to be tuned up for their long-term maladies as well. But I'm very hopeful that with good treatment, and it's not just rehab, by the way. Once you're in for rehab for a month, then you got to take care of the rest of your life, going into a 12-step support group, having therapy and so on. But I'm very hopeful that he will recover.
The rest of your life, but we're all surrounded by all of this. We're going to hear in a few minutes from the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, but let's turn to our listeners first. Rich is calling from Baltimore. Hi, Rich. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm an emergency room physician, and where I practice, I'd have to say 20% of the patients have prescription drug problems.
20% of the people you see in the emergency room?
Yes.
And is that they're abusing the prescription drugs or just mistakenly taking them in the wrong volume or way?
Abusing.
Abusing. 20%. 1 in 5.
Yeah. I counted one weekend, 20% of the problems either were in the emergency room trying to get prescriptions for narcotics and benzodiazepines or had them.
And these are people coming in, what, after traffic accidents or trying to get the drugs, you're saying?
Trying to get drugs. They say they have back pain, headaches. Those are their typical complaints.
That is an amazing volume from a first-hand report there. Rich, thanks for your call. Let's turn to Dr. Nora Volkoff. She is director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse. She joins us from Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Volkoff, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me here.
Give us a more precise sense, if you can, of the scale of this problem. How many Americans are caught up in prescription drug abuse?
Well, you've heard some very good numbers. It is estimated that approximately 6.3 million Americans age 12 or older have used prescription medication for non-medical purposes in the prior 30 days. So that's 6.3 million Americans.
Who's most likely to get caught up in this? What kind of person in what kind of situation?
In this situation, we have people of all ages. Usually for drugs, it's the adolescents and the young adults that are most vulnerable. But with prescription medication, we're seeing people over 65 years of age becoming addicted. So we're seeing it throughout the whole lifespan.
And how, in your experience, how is this happening? Is it happening because of raids on the medicine chest primarily, or are doctors complicit in this? Are doctors part of the problem?
There are multiple factors that are responsible for this. One of them is that more people are being prescribed these medications for medical reasons. And as a result of that, there's more drug that's available. We're listening about it in advertisements. There's also access through the web. There's access through friends that give them. They are in the cabinet. So it's the availability that makes it accessible, while at the same time, the notion that perhaps these drugs are not as dangerous as illegal drugs because they are being prescribed by physicians.
Are they as dangerous as illegal drugs?
They can be as dangerous as illegal drugs, absolutely.
Kirsten's calling from Lowell, Massachusetts. Hi, Kirsten, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm an addict in active recovery, and I will be for the rest of my life. My personal experience is that these drugs are easy to get, and that treatment process for addicts is very fragmented. I think that this shows with Limbaugh and Kennedy, with their issues, that people in prominent media and political positions mm-hmm. are experiencing the same problems that a large percentage of society is experiencing. And I really feel that this larger problem is something that is not addressed. I feel that modern society and advertising promotes this idea that we can avoid feeling pain.
Yep.
And that it is normal to experience from day to day these problems of discomfort.
Kirsten, how did you get snagged up? What drug got to you?
They were diet pills, mostly stimulants.
Mm-hmm. And do you still have the urge?
I have the urge not to deal with things. I think myself and others, it's difficult to... we're not taught to deal with problems, and I think treatment facilities, they assist not only in getting off of those the drug of choice, whether it be alcohol or drugs or name you, whatever that be, but it's also in just dealing with the day in and day out issues of life and
yeah.
the problems that we come across. And most addicts will say, you know, they feel the need to drink or take a prescription drug when they come across those problems. And
yeah.
I really feel that there needs to be more money going into these types of treatment facilities, more social institutions to deal with this, with these issues.
Because it's really out there. Kirsten, we wish you good luck, and thank you for your candor. Dr. Markell, what about it? Have we over-medicalized our lives? All the marketing that's out there, Kirsten refers to, you know, the sort of message, if you turn on the television, is drugs will take away your problems.
Well, I think that all of her points were very astute, and I think we have over-medicalized. I mean, you can't open a newspaper or a magazine or turn on the TV without this new pill that will improve and enhance your life.
Yep.
And of course, most of us, not just addicts, don't like to deal with difficult issues or painful issues. And when you get trapped into that vicious cycle of taking a pill that will instantly gratify that need or taking a drink or whatever, it's a very useful tool until it no longer becomes a useful tool. That's when you get caught up in problems, whether with the law or problems with your own health.
And Dr. Volkoff, what about resources put to this? Given the scale of the problem, is the country at grips with it?
Unfortunately, these situations have to happen that prominent people end up with problems with the drugs for it to catch the attention. This is a problem, prescription abuse, that has existed for many years, is growing significantly, and the nation has not been aware of it. We're seeing it indirectly by the number of admissions in emergency rooms, by the number of accidents associated with it. And are we prepared in terms of infrastructure to deal with the problem? Not completely, because to start with, people that are addicted are denying it. And also, when they recognize they have a problem, they are afraid to come and seek treatment because the addiction is stigmatized. See how we are dealing with it. Sinful behavior, confession. We don't deal with those terms when someone comes up and says, I have cancer. We basically describe the person commented that this is what's going on with their lives. So there are those two issues. We do not have sufficient infrastructure medically, number one. Number two, because of the stigmatization, people that are addicted are afraid to come up and say, I need help.
Until, if they're public enough, they may find themselves right there in the headlines. Witness Patrick Kennedy and Rush Limbaugh. Dr. Nora Volkoff, Director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, we're grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks to you.
Dean's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Dean, you're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to point out that I've had some personal experience, not myself, but a very close relative of mine, who has taken the Ambien, and they have suffered some uncharacteristic well, they wake up in the middle of the night and they basically do sleepwalking, have no remembrance of what they've done. They can't believe that they've done these things. And that's an issue that I think that that Mr. Kennedy may have suffered. And trust me, I'm not a Kennedy supporter in any way, shape, or fashion.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I've had personal experience with individuals that I've known that have taken the Ambien.
Let me ask Dr. Markell about that, if I may, Dean, and thank you for your call. Dr. Markell, we read about this recently, front page stories about Ambien takers kind of walking to the fridge and right out the front door and not even knowing about it. Can sleeping pills, I mean, we know they have that effect. That's been reported. But can they be abused?
Oh, absolutely. They could be abused because we all like to get a good night's sleep. And some of the other side effects that a sleeping pill will do for you, depending on the type of pill, is that it will help relax you. So there's a huge amount of abuse of barbiturates and sleeping pills and Valium-type drugs that are used for, as doctors call them, sleepers. So it is a very big drug, potentially drug of abuse.
Scott McKay, was Patrick Kennedy saying that he was taking this as a relaxant? Was he conceding that he was abusing the sleeping pill or not?
No, he doesn't concede that he abused the sleeping pill. In fact, he's a little bit hazy on some of the events of that evening.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he seems to be saying is that the sleeping pill, the Ambien, acted as a trigger. And one thing that Dr. Markell might be able to shed some light on here is the relationship between addiction and depression. You know, it's almost a chicken and egg thing. But, you know, to people, one thing I've wondered is, do the drugs cause the depression because you get addicted, or does depression make you seek the drugs?
That's a good question. Dr. Markell?
Well, it's an excellent question. I'll give you an answer that my medical students despise, which yes and no. And it is a chicken and egg issue, and we know that of people who are diagnosed with substance abuse problems, at least 50% of them have another mental health problem, most frequently depression, and the second would be bipolar or manic depression. Do you self-medicate because you're depressed or you're too hyper, or are you depressed as a result of the drugs? It depends on the patient, but the two go together very commonly. And I'd just like to add one other issue, that we're getting hung up in terms that are posing false dichotomies or tautologies.
Okay. Tell us.
Abuse, well, if you're using the drug differently than the way the doctor prescribes it, that's technically abuse. How the drug is used, or if you're using it for X or Y or Z reason, that's not the point. We know by Mr. Kennedy's admission he has a substance abuse problem.
Yep.
We know by Mr. Limbaugh's admission that he has a substance abuse problem. millions of Americans, actually one out of four Americans, have some type of substance abuse problem. What we need to figure out is how are we going to treat this as a bona fide disease that does have relapses, that does have recurrences, and treat that, as Dr. Volkoff just said, similar to the way we would treat someone with cancer, diabetes, or hypertension.
Let's hear from our listeners on that. Anne is calling from Rockville, Maryland. Hi, Anne, you're on the air.
Hi. I also wanted to point out something nobody's talked about, and that is the physical effects of just ingesting these painkillers. I got in trouble because I suffer from migraine headaches, yeah. And I was taking medication as prescribed by one doctor according to the directions on the prescription,
mm-hmm.
and only realized I was in trouble when I was away from my home and ran out of the medication and could not get them in another state because, of course, they're controlled substances.
Right.
Started to go into what I guess what obviously was withdrawal, recognized my problem, but managed to get home, went into my home, hunkered down for a week or 10 days and went through withdrawal, and have been struggling with both migraines and this problem ever since.
But you were addicted and didn't even know it and then had to come out of that tunnel.
Exactly, and did not seek treatment to do that, thanks to people like Mr. Limbaugh, who publicly make you feel like you're morally bankrupt and a person of weak character. And so you live with the shame and the addiction, and then what happens to you when you suffer some sort of injury or you have a migraine?
Right, and you need it, but if you go back to it, you may be in trouble. Anne, thanks very much for your call. Let me get one more. Sam is calling from Natick, Massachusetts. Hi, Sam, you're on the air.
Oh, very good. Thank you for taking my call. You know, there's one factor here that nobody is actually, everybody seems to duck, is the fact that since we started to fight this war on drugs, if you look at the statistics, look at the television, every single time you see the war on drugs, you see the face of black, you see the face of junkies, we see the face of someone who lives in the ghetto.
Right, but not in the Kennedy-Limbaugh cases.
But unfortunately, statistically, if you look at epidemiological data, you will find out that the greatest abusers are people who have money, who gets this and who will get it at all costs at any time without being a suspect.
Yeah, well, these are certainly people with money right here. Sam, our time is short, but we appreciate your call. Dr. Markell, back to you on this personal responsibility front. We heard Rush Limbaugh say in that clip, I take responsibility. But you say let's treat this as a disease. So what's the right balance here?
Well, you do need a balance. I mean, you do need to take personal responsibility as an addict, and you need to seek out treatment, and you need to stay in treatment, whether it's a 12-step program or other support programs. But it's also a disease because your brain is actually telling you in stressful times or whatever, use drugs, get high. And that's something you need to learn specific tools, psychological insights to be able to fight that off. And you also need support of other people to do that. So it's really not one or the other. And it's not a heroic thing. I mean, as the caller just said before, the faces of addiction in America and around the world are multicultural, black, white, everything in between. Many people use substances of abuse to the point of health problems. And so we have to think of this as a very human condition. It's not a black or a white problem or Hispanic problem or an American or European problem. It's a health problem that we're facing around the world today.
In increasingly large numbers, listeners, I guess the message is be on guard because it can come and get you. It got Patrick Kennedy. It got Rush Limbaugh. Dr. Howard Markell at University of Michigan, we're grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Susan Spencer Wendell in Palm Beach at the Palm Beach Post. Susan, thanks for your reporting. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And Scott McKay, reporter for the Providence Journal, joining us from Providence, Rhode Island. Scott, great to have you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
This is On Point.